Today, it's Michael Francese. What a pleasure. He was introduced to me by Sean Atwood, a good friend of me, good friend of the channel. That's what people say, isn't it? He's a friend of the channel. He's just a friend of mine, isn't he? And Sean's great. And I was saying the other day, he got me to come over to his house the other day. We all went, me and the missus went over to Sean and his missus and the family and all of that. And he tried to get me, he's always talking about me having a hairy back. He tried to get me into a jacuzzi with him. And I was saying, listen, mate, you know, I'd love that. So I brought my swimming trunks, but it turned out the jacuzzi was basically in the bathroom, like next to the toilet. And it was a bath, basically. And I had to decline, unfortunately, and say, unfortunately, Shauno, you know, he was just sat in the bath. No, he wasn't. And I said, I'm not doing it. Anyway, that's Sean. I've gone off the topic now because we're talking about Michael Francese, who was a capo. And he tells me how to pronounce it as well. I don't remember. What was it? Brig something? Yeah, you know, he'll tell you what exact role he played. I love all the mafia movies, and I don't remember any of the names of the things, but he's reformed very much. He looks great. He's in his 70s. Doesn't sound or look it at all. And he spent 10 years in prison for racketeering, and he gives us an insight. I mean, he goes around giving talks now about mafia life, and he never glamorizes it. One thing I forgot to ask him actually is if that law applies in the US as well, because in the UK we do have a law that you can't make a profit off of crimes you've committed. And I suppose you can get around that by saying, well, listen, I'm going to talk about the bad side of the mafia life. I'm not making money from the crimes. I'm saying, hey, don't go there, don't do it. And he doesn't speak about specific crimes. And I don't even know if they have that rule. We talk a little bit at the end about politics. I think Michael makes it clear that he's more on the Trump side than the Biden side. But he certainly, you know, he's quite nuanced there and sees that some of the Trump stuff. I mean, my issue with Trump, aside from anything else, is just the lack of statesmanship-like. Not that statesman-like-ishness. Not that I expect everybody to be, you know, boring, because you can be boring if you go too far the other way. But I think, as Michael himself says, all that tweeting with the capital letters, it's just not... you can't be the leader of the free world with that kind of attitude. However, maybe that's snobbishness on my part. Maybe he's the man of the people. There's a lot, you know, I know I'm not going to go into it because I don't need to alienate people on both sides by criticizing both sides, do I? What's the point in that? Who will learn anything? Who will be wiser from my opinions about American politics, of which I know very little? All of that is to say this was a very exciting moment for me to be able to talk with Michael Francese. He was portrayed in Goodfellas. So there is the character Michael Francese in Goodfellas. That's pretty mad. And this was done as a live. So there were a couple of questions from the audience that we asked him. And he's doing a tour with Sean in the UK, of all places, as he pronounces it, Birmingham, or Birmingham, as we say, on the 12th of May. And then Cardiff, Kingston, London, Glasgow, Manchester, Belfast, Dublin. Those are all the places in May, and a lot of it's almost sold out, but there are still tickets available on Eventbrite. I will put the link in the description so you can get hold of it. Do go and follow Michael Francese on his YouTube channel. He's got a YouTube channel now, very, very popular. People absolutely love it. Send my love if you speak to Sean, if any of you, Sean Atwood, and get hold of my book, The Psychology of Secrets, to learn all about authoritarian high control groups and secrecy and all of those kinds of things. It's not a million miles away from this topic. But now, it's Michael Francese, a man remade. Enjoy. Michael, how are you doing?
I'm very good, thank you. Good to be here.
Good. Good. I've got some big questions to ask you, some that I'm frightened to ask you, not really, but for the few who don't know, tell me a bit about you and the mafia.
Well, you know, I kind of grew up in that life. My dad was the underboss of the Colombo family, one of the five New York mob families. So, you know, originally wasn't going to be involved in that life. My dad wanted me to go to school, be a doctor. I was on that road until he got a 50-year prison sentence for a federal crime, and that was kind of life-changing for me. I felt that I needed to help my dad get out of what I thought was an unfair sentence. And so my dad proposed me for membership in the life in 1970. I was made a member of that life, took an oath in 1975, and was part of that life for about 15 years, almost 20 years, I should say, until I became a major target of law enforcement myself, was arrested, I don't know, 17, 18 times. I was indicted 7 times. I had 2 federal racketeering cases. At the end of the day, I ended up taking a plea for a 10-year prison sentence. I had a $15 million restitution, went off to do my time. And just before that, I met a young woman that's now my wife of almost 40 years. And as a result of my meeting her, I decided to try to walk away from a life that I knew was in serious trouble. And here I am today, some 20-some-odd years later, and alive and free and able to talk to you.
Well, you're looking good. And look, let's get on to the early days then. Because, okay, so your dad went 50 years. Now, obviously, bank robbery is a very serious crime. But people, and I can't say the word on here because YouTube won't allow me, but we call them PDF files on here. People, you know, go to playgrounds and things. They get like 2 years, right? 50 years seems quite extreme. Is there a big issue with this and the sentencing in the States and I guess in the world?
Well, not only that, you know, I will take it to my grave that my dad was framed on that case. My dad was not a bank robber. He ordered the bank robberies, allegedly. But we found that not to be true. You know, we investigated that case thoroughly. All the witnesses recanted their testimony. My dad was just a major target at that time, and they treated organized crime figures a lot differently than they treated normal people, normal criminals, I would say. So it was a very excessive sentence. It was totally, totally excessive. But, you know, beyond that, my dad didn't even commit that crime. So he did 40 years on that 50. We can never get the conviction overturned. So it was a life-changing experience for him, myself, my whole family, and caused me to be pretty resentful of law enforcement and government back then.
Is it true that you were planning to be a doctor? I read that somewhere.
Yeah, I was in medical. I was a pre-med student when my dad received his 50-year prison sentence and started his time. So, yeah, I was on that road, and that's what my dad wanted for me, you know, prior to all of this happening.
It's amazing, these kind of sliding door moments, and they totally change who you become and who you are. So how much, and I know you get asked this all the time, how much is the mafia life, how much is it like the movies that we've seen?
Well, it depends on the movie, obviously. You know, I mean, Goodfellas was a fairly good depiction of that life. I mean, I was mentioned in that film. I knew all those guys. Donnie Brasco, also pretty accurate, portrayal of that life. Even The Bronx Tale, to a degree. All good movies, brilliantly done. Casino, again, to a degree, was fairly accurate. And then there are, you know, the others that just try to be accurate and really don't cut it, in my view. And one of the greatest movies, I always mention this, was actually an HBO movie. It was the Gotti movie with Armand Assante and Anthony Quinn, excuse me, produced back in 1996. Brilliant depiction of the life.
Interesting. So what are some of those that don't get it right at all?
Well, you know, they don't come to mind because I don't really pay attention to them, you know. But just some, you know, TV movies that were made, excuse me, that just didn't cut it. Sopranos, to a degree, was, a wonderful series, but, you know, not totally accurate. And again, you know, I dismissed the others, so I don't really remember what they're about.
Is it unrealistic, perhaps, that a mob boss might be seeing a therapist as he did in Sopranos?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that would never happen. And if it did, he'd be in the trunk of his car by the end of the week, along with the psychiatrist. So that would never happen.
Whoa. Who would put... I suppose because it's not because he's in touch with his feelings. It's because he's revealing important information.
Exactly. Who knows what he's revealing, right? But that wouldn't be allowed. Absolutely not.
And then it's quite a difficult life, isn't it? Did you struggle at times? How do you pronounce it? You were capo regime?
Capo regime, yeah.
Did you struggle, psychologically at times? It's a lot of pressure, a lot of things going on.
Well, I don't know. You know, psychologically probably is not the word. Emotionally, yeah, at times, because, look. Death is a part of that life, and unfortunately, I saw people that I was close to who didn't make it all the way through, you know, maybe violated the rules and paid for it. There's a lot of emotion involved because you not only have to deal with the life, but you got to deal with law enforcement you know, hounding you all the time. And I was a major target of, I've had more undercover investigations on me and more indictments and trials. And so, you know, I had to deal with all of that. So it's emotionally stressful. I will say that.
I can bet. I don't know how you handled it. I mean, I get people, because I do some things on cults, I do videos about cults, I get a lot of cults who are saying, you know, we're going to come after you, we're going to get you, we're going to do these things. And I can't sleep at night. Like, just knowing that there's these, like, unreplied to emails and messages and things from people saying they're going to come and get me. Did you find a way to, do you get used to it? Was it scarier at first or just never for you?
Well, you know, I don't know. I was blessed, I guess, in being able to handle it all. I don't think I ever suffered psychologically. I can't say that. Emotionally, like I said, but I don't know. I don't mean this to be, I'm certainly not narcissistic in this regard, but I think I have a, you know, pretty good constitution, so to say, you know, to deal with all of this. And I just dealt with it. It was just part of my life. Like I said, I grew up in it. I watched my father. It was natural to me, normal to me. You know, I went to a doctor recently and I had some little condition where, you know, you start to lose your beard a little bit. And he said, you know, that's caused by stress. Do you have a lot of stress? And I said, hey, doc, I don't know. I mean, I just know my life every day. I don't know what stress is or what it isn't. You know, I just live my life. So who knows? You know, you just, it's just the way you deal with things.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you ever wonder, and I mean this just as an intriguing question, if you or a lot of people around you might have a degree of psychopathy to be able to, I mean, if you see a dog being strangled, do you feel really sad?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, yeah, I mean, look, I watched a movie the other day on television. It was called Nowhere, I believe. It was about a young woman that was, human trafficking. She was put in a container in the middle of the ocean. She was pregnant, and I was telling my wife and my daughter, I almost couldn't get through the film what this poor woman was going through there, you know? So, yeah, I mean, I have feelings for other things. I mean, I watched the movie Passion of Christ, and, you know, that got me in a big way. I mean, you know, I mean, I hate to see women or children get hurt. You know, I could deal with guys, but I don't like to see women and children hurt, I guess. I don't know.
And this is a question that I know... I know that you're not going to be able to answer it properly, but I saw it in another video and I thought it was a great question, which is, you know, have you ever killed somebody?
Well, you'll probably see that in every video because that's a question I get asked all the time. You know, so I'm used to that one. Look, you know, my answer is I always try to be as honest as you can. You know, listen, you know, in the United States, I don't know if you know this, if you know about a murder and you don't report it, you're part of a conspiracy to commit murder. So listen, it's obvious in that life that, you know, I saw a lot of people that were here one day, gone the next. So it's part of the life. If you're involved in that life, you're involved in the violent part of that life. There's no escape from it. If people tell you that there is, they're not being honest with you. So, you know, I've seen enough death in my life to last me a lifetime.
Who are you sort of fighting with day to day, just for people who don't really know the ins and outs?
Say that again?
Who are you fighting against? Why are there deaths? What's going on?
Well, you know, you have rules in that life, and there's consequences if you break them. You know, for instance, you can never violate another man's wife, daughter, sister, you know, a relative in that regard. If you do that, that's you're writing your own death warrant on that. You know, we couldn't deal with drugs back then. If you dealt with drugs, you could have got killed, and I knew people that did. You know, so... You know, there's certain rules that you have to, and there's a lot of betrayal in that life. Listen, it's the street life, you know. You know, in normal life, there's betrayal in corporate America, but you normally don't get killed for it, you know. On the street, when there's betrayal, you could suffer with your life. So it's around you all the time. You got to be careful to play by the rules and know how to negotiate that life to keep yourself alive. So, you know, it's not easy. I always say this. If you're a made member of that life, you took the oath, you're a made member, and you die of old age and you die free, you've really accomplished something.
I see Away luggage a lot when I travel. As much as I love its looks, I prefer soft side suitcases and always wished Away made one. Well, guess what? Now they do. This suitcase seriously looks better than any old school soft side suitcases I've seen and is designed to be lighter than others on the market. Soft side comes in four of their best selling sizes and tried and true colours. There is something for everyone in the lineup, two carry on sizes, two checked sizes, four colours, black, blue, pink. Grey. Made from a high-strength nylon, the bag is tear-resistant as well as weather-resistant. I spilled a little bit of coffee on the grey one this morning and can confirm the claim holds up. The bag is soft but not sensitive, super durable, flexible and expandable. Bonus points for the compression pad system that helps you pack it in and the anti-tipping stabilizer that holds the bag steady while expanded. Both of which are proprietary to Away. And that's actually my favourite bit. It doesn't sort of wobble this way and that. I absolutely pack mine full, take it everywhere I go. Well, when I'm going on holiday, that is. And no matter what's packed inside, it doesn't seem to tip. You've got to check out the new soft side luggage from Away. Head on over to awaytravel.com/heretics. That's awaytravel.com/heretics to see the new soft side luggage from Away. awaytravel.com/heretics.
And I believe it did. I mean, he'd been in prison for some time, but your father died at the age of 103, didn't he? That's quite extraordinary.
Yes.
Did he keep healthy?
He did 40 years in prison. Yeah, he was released at the age of 100, and he died during COVID at 103.
Yikes. Was he somebody? Did he have any tips for living longer? I mean, I'm just thinking, you know, they say olive oil.
Well, you know, my dad was a vitamin freak, I would say. He took 30 pills a day, always believed in vitamins. He used to chase me and my brothers and sisters around with cod liver oil when we were kids. He was just a vitamin guy. You know, he never smoked. He didn't drink to any great degree, only some wine. You know, he never got himself too overweight, you know, so he maintained his health. And, you know, we have good DNA in that part of the family. My dad was one of 19. And all of them died in their late 80s, early 90s. So the DNA helped.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's good news for you, hopefully. But so are there aspects, do you think, of mafia life, mob life that are cult-like? Does it ever get a bit cultish, as in, well, obviously the fact that you can't leave is one part, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, you're in that life. You take an oath. You know what you know, and it's not going to be changed. And you can't be thrown out, so to speak. If you're thrown out, you don't get thrown out. You get rubbed out. You know. So, but I walked away, and it wasn't easy. I had many challenges in getting away from that life. You know, and not going into a witness protection program or cooperating with the government or putting people in jail. So. It wasn't easy to make those steps, but I did it. But I wouldn't consider it a cult, you know. I don't know. It doesn't sound right to associate mob with cult, you know. Maybe I'm wrong, but it doesn't work for me.
No, that's interesting. That's fair enough. I'm starting to sort of see everything as a bit cultist, you know, even certain aspects of politics. And I'm saying, oh, okay, that's a cult, that's a cult. Do you know what I mean?
Well, you know, cult to me, when I hear cult, I hear brainwashing into thinking a certain way, you know, I don't think we were brainwashed. We just agreed and admitted to do certain things and abide by certain rules.
When you went to prison, what was that for? Racketeering, was it?
Yes. The underlying act was tax fraud, but I pled to a RICO conspiracy.
How do you come up with ideas for? I suppose what the mafia is trying to find ways to make money in a different way. Are you sitting there like at a table with a friend, going, okay, you know, thinking of schemes and ways to make it work?
Well, listen, you know, it depends how entrepreneurial you are. You know, there are standard mob, you know, businesses, I would say, like bookmaking, you know, illegal bookmaking because you're not paying taxes on it. Although the government is now a bookmaker and bookmaking is legal as long as you pay taxes. You know, loan sharking, lending money out at usurious rates, that's fine. You know, we got involved in labor unions and racketeering in that regard. They call it racketeering, but we were involved with the unions in a big way. And I was, you know, I kind of thought outside of the box and brought some new things into the family that I hadn't done before. I mean, the major... indictment I had was for, defrauding the government out of tax on every gallon of gasoline. So it's a scheme that myself and a partner came up with and ran it quite effectively for a number of years and made a lot of money. So, yeah, you just think of what you can do and you try to implement it. That's it.
Where do you stand then on legalization of certain things? Because if presumably, I mean, now I know you speak out against the glamorization of mafia life. Presumably, if things like drugs are legal, if things like, I don't even know what else, are legal, is it then harder for the mafia to thrive?
Well, look, I don't believe legalizing certain things that are not good for you is a good idea. I was against legalized gambling on sports. And I think I was right with that because we're seeing a lot of problems as a result of legal gambling. I don't believe in legalizing drugs in any way. I mean, I know cannabis can be used for medical reasons, and I think there is sufficient evidence to prove that that's the case. But for recreational use, I don't think it's a good idea. I had a sister that died of an overdose of drugs. I know she started with marijuana. My brother was a drug addict for 25 years, and again, I can't see any situation where it would have been beneficial to him to legalize any kind of drugs. So things that are not good for you, making them more available in a controlled environment, I don't think that's a good idea. And I think the government is suspicious in that because they do it for tax purposes to raise money. And I don't like it and I'm against it. So, what could I say?
So there's not really, there's not really a way, there's no solution really, is there? Because you either to keep it illegal and these things get forced underground, or you make it legal and make it too easy for people to get hold of this stuff?
Well, I think it's education and then enforcement. It's all about educating young people at an early age of the dangers of drugs, the dangers of gambling. I think it should be part of curriculum in schools because these are two major, major bad habits that could be life-threatening. And, education is important. And then, of course, enforcement. We have drugs pouring in over our southern border here in the United States and permeating our country. And you can't have that. There's not proper enforcement because it's not set up that way right now. So education and enforcement, those are the two remedies, to resolve the problem as best as you can. And I think if done effectively, you can make a major dent in both of these, terrible, possibly addictive situations.
When you first went to prison, were people aware of who you were, obviously, and did you feel like people feared you?
Well, people were aware because I was pretty highly publicized and my father was highly publicized, so the name resonated with people. I don't know so much it was fear as people wanting to get close to you, hoping there's a benefit by knowing you, being involved with you, so I had a lot of that. I never had a problem in prison with anyone, So you're looked at differently, in a good way. Maybe not by the prison system, but by the inmates, definitely.
And 3 years of solitary. I mean, they've done studies. I've seen these on TV where they put someone alone in a room for like 5 hours and they go insane. So how did you get through 3 years?
I am totally against solitary confinement for young people. I think it'll destroy them emotionally, no doubt. For me, it was a question of determination. I wanted to get home to my wife and kids, and not only wanted to get home, but I was on a daily basis, concerned with their welfare and how they were doing, number one. Number two, it was during my prison time that I became a person of faith, and that really sustained me without a doubt. I read a lot. I had a Sony Walkman back then. I listened to the news. I wanted to stay current on what was going on in the outside world. So I was able to get through it. I was very fortunate in that regard. I know a lot of guys that couldn't. I mean, I saw a lot of bad things happen in solitary with men that just couldn't deal with it. And I don't demean them in any way. I understand. It's a tough situation. And I think it's something, unless somebody is a danger to themselves and a danger to the people around them, solitary should be a last resort.
Why did they put you in solitary?
It was administrative detention. They were pretty upset with me because I wouldn't cooperate, and they were trying to teach me a lesson, and they did. They did.
Yeah. Afterwards, did you feel, I guess you felt you didn't want to go back there. Did you have to sort of fall in line a little bit?
Well, I mean, what could you do when you're in solitary? You know, you can't do anything. You're in a, you know, a 6x8 cell 24/7. So, no, but look, I had made up my mind that the life was over. And when I got out of prison, to me, it was all about, you know, turning my life around, preserving my family, and starting a new life. You know, fortunately, I got out. I was young enough to do so. So, you know, for the past 25 years, I have no complaints. I've had struggles, obviously, challenges. Walking away from that life was not easy, but I made it through, so I'm very fortunate in that regard.
I got the question I like from a viewer called Ian Holmes, who says, do American mobsters view UK gangland as somewhat twee? Do you know much about the UK scene?
Well, a little bit more than I did in the past, having spent a lot of time in the UK and meeting with a couple of the, you know, street guys, I would say. We didn't really pay attention to what was going on. There was really no mafia presence in the United Kingdom, so we didn't really, you know, think about it. But, you know, I saw some guys that I would say, you know, they were legitimate street guys that I met up with when I was there, that, again, that no longer in that life. But, hey, every country has their criminal organizations some way, shape, or form.
Do you ever watch the movies like Snatch or those ones?
I love Peaky Blinders. It was one of my one of my favorite series of all time. I thought it was tremendously done and extremely interesting and entertaining.
Yeah, that was great. I really liked that as well. I got a couple more questions, but I just want to ask a little bit about this tour that you're doing with my friend Sean Atwood and his production company Gadfly. What's going on?
Yeah, let me get it right. I want to give some of the dates, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I might be able to bring that up, you know.
Yeah, I'm very excited. It's we start in May. I think I have a date, May 10th, and then we launch in Birmingham on the 12th of May, and then we go to Cardiff, Kingston, London, Glasgow, Manchester, Belfast, and Dublin. We're doing a whole bunch of dates, pretty much back to back. And I got to tell you, I was on tour there in 2022, mm-hmm. and it was one of the most satisfying and rewarding experiences I've ever had. And I've been doing this 25 years. The people were just wonderful. You know, the way they warmed up to me was terrific. I mean, I'd be honest with you, I would walk down the street and guys would come out of pubs and grab me and bring me inside to have a drink. I remember once going into a taxi and the taxi driver said, "Hey, Mr. Francis, don't pay me. Just give me a signed copy of your book." And yeah, people were great. I mean, all over. So I'm really looking forward to coming back, and it's going to be a different show this time. And we'll do a Q&A and a VIP, you know, time and all that. And it's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait.
Where do you think that love in the UK or elsewhere for gangsters or former gangsters comes from?
You know, I can't explain it. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of people said, "Hey, we just love the, you know, the fact that you're real about it and that you don't hold back and you say what's on your mind." And, you know, people were just wonderful. I don't know what it was. I was just very grateful that they just accepted me the way they did. I mean, it was wonderful.
Going back to your life in the mafia, I mean, when you left, obviously, I know people ask you about that. I'm always conscious of that. I don't ask you. I know you've been asked every question a million times, though. But when you left, that's got to be, I mean, were you scared about leaving? In all the movies, someone who tries to leave gets killed.
Well, you know, look, I never sold my former associates short. I knew what they were capable of. My boss took it very personal when I walked away. He was really upset with me, and he and I were very close. He was an old timer. He was, you know, he was a pretty tough guy. Fortunately for me, not fortunately for him, he went to prison for 100 years. So, you know, he wasn't on the street to deal with me. But I had other things to deal with. I had my father to deal with. But, you know, the bottom line is this, brother. I just outlasted everybody. You know, the life was devastated during my time. The RICO Act really, really devastated that life, put so many guys away. So many guys became informants. So there was just a lot of turmoil going on. And the bottom line, I didn't hurt anybody. I didn't put anybody in prison. I wasn't there to hurt people. I didn't use, you know, cooperation to get out of prison. I did all my time. So I think people realized, hey, gee, he just wants out, you know, and I paid my dues during that life. So did my father. So I think at some point in time, they just said, he's not hurting anybody. Just let him go. I moved out to California, 3,000 miles from my hometown. So and I didn't bother anybody. Now, some people are mad that I talk about the life, but I don't talk about it in a way to implicate anybody in anything, you know? So, listen, I'm 72 years old, and they got other things to worry about. They don't have to worry about me, and everybody I ran with is gone. These are all new guys there now, so.
You're 72? You look much younger than that.
Well, like I said, my dad died at 103, so we got some good genes in the family. You know?
That's extraordinary. That's mad. Okay, so what do you think about people who did inform?
Well, listen, you know, I don't want to get into people's heads and heart. People did what they had to do for whatever reason they did it. You know, some people say they were betrayed by the life. Other people, you know, say other things. I don't know. I'm not in their individual circumstance, so I don't want to pass judgment on anybody. They did what they did, and, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that's none of my business now.
Were you aware of our mutual friend Sean Atwood back in the day? Because I know he did 5 years in Arizona.
No, I didn't know him back then. You know, Sean and I got together afterwards. Like Sean a lot. You know, he's a good guy, and he and I get along very well. And I appreciate the fact that he came to me, approached me about this tour. So, but I didn't know him. I know his story now, obviously, and his little run in with Sammy Gravano, you know, but the bull. But yeah, interesting guy.
Yeah, I went for dinner at his the other day, and he tried to get me to go into a jacuzzi with him, which I thought that was going to be great, but it was like in a bathroom next to like the toilet and stuff. It was like, Sean, man, you know. But that Sean doesn't think about that stuff. He just wants everyone in the jacuzzi with him. He's a good guy. What else? There was a question here. Is it fun to see Rudy Giuliani indicted now?
You know, listen. You know, Rudy told me when he put me on trial, he said to me, if I convict you, you're going to get 100 years. I'm giving you double what your father got. And that's probably what I would have gotten had I got convicted. Fortunately, I was acquitted in that case. But listen, I have no ill will for Rudy. He was doing his job back then, you know. That's what he did. He actually wrote the foreword for my last book. I mean, I met with him on a radio show about a year ago, and he said, Michael, I've been watching you for 30 years, and I think that your transformation is sincere. So he said a lot of nice things. He also wrote a nice foreword to my book, so I have no animosity. And listen, you know, I'm going to put it out there whether people agree or not. What they're doing to Trump and everybody around Trump here in the United States is just, you know, I don't like when government uses their ability to go after people, and it's wrong. Whether you like Trump or not, whether you like Giuliani or not, it's just very unfair the way they're acting here. So,
Can you elaborate? Because I don't know that much about it. It's all American politics all over there.
Well, you know, it's just the current government using law enforcement to go after their political enemies. And it's all political. And it's people don't understand how damaging that is. You know, that's when you fall into anarchy, when an administration uses the Department of Justice and law enforcement and all of their agencies to go after people that don't agree with their agenda, their political enemies. It's strictly politics. It's not a question of criminal behavior. It's politics. And if they do it against their enemies, they can do it against anybody. And that's what's happening here in the United States to a very large degree. There is not equal balance in the law. You know, it's so obvious, and people are seeing that here in the United States, and we have a lot of division as a result of that. And it's very harmful. We also have a media that sides with, you know, the current administration on so many things, and when the media doesn't report the news but plays cover for, you know, government, that's very, very dangerous. And, you know, we really hope that it can reverse itself here in the States.
I take it you're not a fan of Biden.
I am absolutely not a fan of Biden, and it's nothing personal. His policies have been horrible, both domestically. Our world is in chaos. When the leader of the United States is incompetent, and in my view, very dishonest and weak. He's very weak. The world is in chaos. And look what we have. I mean, we have Israel and Iran now fighting. We have, you know, Russia and Ukraine. We have China, you know, making threats to Taiwan. We didn't have this through 4 years of Trump. We didn't have this through 4 years of prior administration. So it's obvious that he's not a capable and competent leader.
Yeah. Yeah, I try to stay out of it, but I do see what you mean. And I see that it is a point. I had a debate with a friend of mine recently about it. I said, you might not like Trump. You might find him rude and whatever it might be, but he didn't rule over any wars. And it seems like before him and after him, there's just wars all around the world. That's not good. And I know that I just feel like I have to say just the controversial thing, because everyone's just, you need to get shouted at. Why not? That making his assistant health secretary a trans person who's quite overweight, I don't know what kind of symbol that was trying to show to the world, but it's just virtue signaling for me. And I just thought he's weak. And, you know,
well, you know, the problem is, when you put DEI, you know, and adversity in front of competence, you have a problem. You know, to me, if there were 20 Italians, and I'm Italian 100%, okay, and one person of any other race or ethnic background, and that person was more competent than the 20 Italians, I told the 20 Italians, get on a boat and go home. We need the person with the most competency to be in that position. And unfortunately, this administration thinks differently. You know, it's all about, you know, diversity, but diversity doesn't mean that they're the best people to do the job. And, you know, it's terrible what's going on. And look, you know, you said it, it's not about personality. It's about policies. It's about competence. It's about what kind of job you're doing for the benefit of the country, for the benefit of the world. And whether you like Trump or not, there's things about Trump I don't like. You know, I hated the fact that he was on Twitter and saying all these things. Of yeah. course, as a former New Yorker, I understand. New Yorkers defend themselves. You know, he could have been more presidential. He could have been used diplomacy a bit more. He didn't. I think it hurt him. People just got tired of the chaos around him. But I always say this, who caused the chaos? They were attacking him every single day of his presidency, every day. So the guy had to fight back. I don't think he fought back in the most effective way. But and even now, look at the chaos. The guy didn't indict himself. He didn't cause it. You know what I mean? So he's being forced to defend himself. It's just horrible. But, yeah. Hey, listen, hopefully it works itself out and this country becomes more unified and the world settles down. We'll see what happens in November.
Yeah, the thing is, Trump, and I'm just sort of half joking now, but he must have committed some crimes over the years, no?
Well, listen, if he committed crimes over the years, that's irrelevant. Did he commit crimes while he was president of the United States? That's very relevant because in the history of our country, 200 and some odd years, no president was ever charged with a criminal act, ever. And I'm sure that, you know, things were done. So, you know, he's had, well, I had 7 indictments. He's got 4, but he has more indictments than most other mob guys on the street. And the charges are just nonsensical. I mean, look, I have a lot of experience with this. I've fought for my life for, you know, 25 years, and I did time in prison. And just from an outsider looking in with a lot of experience, it's absolute nonsense. I can't describe it any other way. It's nonsense.
I've got a nice comment from The Real Honest Truth that says, Andrew Gold, Michael Francis inspired many people, including myself, to change their life for the better. Can you say God bless to Michael? God is guiding us all.
Well, I'll tell him I appreciate that very much, and that's what I strive to do. You know, you try to lead by example and give the best possible advice that you can, and I certainly don't always hit the mark, but I try to do it as often as I can.
Yeah, well, I think that's a beautiful sentiment. I would just remind people to please go and check. I'm going to just put it up here again. Where is it? The date, I'll put it over my face. It's coming up soon, isn't it? And you'll be back. It's May. You're going to be back in the UK.
Yeah, I have a big private dinner on May 10th with I'm not sure of the club, but it's a big private club group, and I'm excited about that. And then, listen, I want all your viewers to know we're going to do a Q&A, and, you know, I do book signings, and I don't just run in and run out. You know, we spend time with our people. We appreciate the fact that they, you know, they buy tickets and come to see the show, and we make sure that they have a wonderful evening. And you know, you can hold me to that. I'm sure those people that seen me in the past know that that's for real. So we're looking forward to it. And we're going to bring warm weather. Last time we brought sunshine. We had I was there for 6 weeks. I think we had 2 days of rain. So hopefully we're going to bring California sunshine again.
Thank you, Michael Francis, for coming on the podcast. What a pleasure it was to talk to him. That was pretty cool. I was a bit intimidated, even though he was really, really nice. He was nice. He was smiley the whole time. There was nothing he did that was intimidating, but he just has an aura. And I don't know to what extent that's the way, you know, if I'd never spoken to him before, it's like, okay, this man has an aura, or because I know about his history in the mob. So I don't know, but I felt stifled by his aura. He's also somebody who has, I almost said this and I didn't quite say it. I think you guys can hear me almost saying it, but he's somebody who has become handsomer with age. Now, that's not something you say directly to a former mafia man, right? But I honestly look up older pictures of Michael. I say the same thing to David Baddiel when he was on. He's also, there are certain men who, and maybe that's a sexist thing, because I don't think there are women. I'm not going to go down that route, right? But people definitely don't appreciate women the same way. But a handsome older man, a George Clooney, that kind of thing, people get handsomer. But that's irrelevant to what Michael does, because he talks about the mob and all those things. So do go to Remade Man Tour 2024. I'm going to put the links in the description. So go there, follow Michael Francis, and also get hold of my book, The Psychology of Secrets. It's at the moment reviewing really, really well. At the time of talking, it's got 21 reviews, 20 of them are 5-star. One of them was 2-star, and that person was in America before they were able to get it in America. So I've got a feeling I was trolled. But you know what? It actually looks better, because when it's only 5-star, I don't think anybody trusts it. I don't trust like a cafe that's just 5-star. You're like, hang on a minute. So maybe it's a good thing. I don't know, but please do, if you get hold of the book, and also please review. And I'll see you next time.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.